Mother, man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem! Every time, dude, gets me fired the fuck up.
Oh, Gacy!
And especially on this episode, yeah. Number 17, man. We're closing in on 20. Can
yes,
you
sir.
Believe that
That's
shit?
Fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, this is crazy. You think about it. 17th episode, but that's what it is.
Yep. And this week, we are doing the Iceman, Richard Kuklinski.
Yeah. You were the one, dude. You brought this up when we were talking about all the different ones we wanted to do.
Yep.
And I remember writing it down, and I'd heard of him, but it'd been a while, didn't know exactly, you know, what the deal was. And I thought, well, you know, I've read a lot of, you know, mafia, hitman type stories.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're cool, don't get me wrong. But
nothing compares to the Iceman.
This is like off the fucking hook, man. This is going to be so wicked. Yeah, hell, if you don't know who Richard Kuklinski is, then you are in for a treat.
He's a big giant of a man.
He's a bad motherfucking man.
Yes, he is.
So we're going to talk all about that coming up in the next segment. But episode 16 last week was good. We did the crazy story of Ken McElroy, which was another one that you suggested.
Right, dude. Fucking Ken McElroy. That entire story is just so insane. Like, what
it
the
is.
Fuck, man? For
it's
real.
Like something literally out of a movie. Like,
yeah,
the
yeah.
whole town, like, showed up and it's gunned like, this motherfucker
fuck
down.
This guy. We hate him.
Yeah. And then nobody talks. I mean, that's
ever.
Pretty crazy.
Ever.
Ever, still, yeah.
So, yeah, if you haven't heard that episode, go check that shit out.
Go listen to that.
It's a crazy-ass story.
It
man.
Is. It really is. In Missouri.
Missouri.
So, the Hindenburg Journalist Pro software, I can't say enough how
it's freaking
killer
great,
this stuff is. We've been using it now exclusively. I even did the karaoke song this week in Journalist Pro, and it handled the screaming.
Everything fucking sounds superb, man.
Yeah, I cannot say enough to the great people over there at Hindenburg, because they're really kicking ass with this stuff. It saves me an immense amount of time.
Yeah,
it really does. And the finished product is better, I really got to say. So hopefully you guys dig it, because we have had some good compliments.
Yep.
That people liked the way the show sounded last week, which was the first one that we used
in the Hindenburg. Yeah,
right. So we've also got a piece of the interview that I did with Joey Vera, bass player of Fate's Warning, Armored Saint, also played a couple years in Anthrax. Joey is a great guy.
It's a great interview.
Thanks. I think it turned out really good. It was the first one where we used the Hindenburg. Last week, the Journalist Pro with an interview, because now with this, for you web geek or software geek types out there, the way it works with this software now, when we do a Skype interview, the Skype interview is on one track, and we, or me, or whoever's doing the interview, is on another.
So, yeah, so you can like level out each other instead of having all one track and you're trying to deal with different people's voice levels and everything. So
right. Yeah. And Journalist Pro adjusts the volumes and does a like a voice analysis and then EQs it based on that, and you can tweak it. But man, it's really
so good,
impressive.
Dude.
It's really impressive. So it makes that much better. So we get about 6 minutes of that, and then we're gonna play the full Joey Vera interview is a bonus episode. It's about 30 minutes.
Yeah, about 30 minutes. Too long for an episode. So
right.
Doing a couple of bonus interviews for everybody.
Yeah, we got a couple of those coming up that we'll mention at the end. So we got all that and much more. So I got to tell you, you might want to get something cold to drink, Chris. Put a little extra ice in it, you think?
A little extra ice.
Fuck yeah. But if you're going to get something to drink, let's make sure nobody's like standing next to you, like putting shit in your drink.
You never know what they're putting in your drink.
Because Big Rich was known for doing all kinds of shit. So let's do it. Dude, how about some Carcass? Oh, man. Embodiment off the Heartwork album. I love that shit.
Fuck yeah.
So wicked. So wicked. And speaking of wicked, Richard Richard Kuklinski, which is a tough one to pronounce, but after you've said it a few times, it's not too bad.
Right.
But he was known to his peers as the end of the cops, as the Iceman. We're going to get all into this. He is considered one of the most prolific contract killers because he
worked for every family fucking
he did, and he was even going into Manhattan, as we'll talk, and like trying shit out on bums and just killing people like night after night. I mean, just insane. It was
what he loved to do, apparently. Yeah. I mean, like literally what he loved to do.
He loved doing it. Yeah. And he is definitely, in my opinion, the definition of no fucks given. I mean,
zero fucks.
Just flat out, I don't think doesn't give a fuck.
I think he was born with no fucks.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, for real.
Zero. Because he is just so fucking cold, which, again, the Iceman nickname. So,
Oh, dude.
But he worked, like you said, for several of the families. And he was doing paid hits for, they say, up to 30 years. So, yeah. I mean, he was
a long fucking time.
He was doing it for a really long time. And before that, he was known as a stone cold killer with a hair trigger temper when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
And he was all over the media, though, after this arrest and, you know, the HBO specials. And everybody went crazy because those kind of stories just sell, you know, mobsters and, you know, violence and shootouts and
the range of time that he was supposedly doing it and shit. Like, right. How the fuck
and the ways he did it,
too. Oh, my God. So fucking awesome.
Yeah, for sure. So that's just kind of setting the table here. But he was born in April 1935 in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Fucking Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be there pretty soon. I'll be close by. His father, Stanley, was a Polish immigrant who worked as a brakeman for the railroad in New Jersey. And his mom, Anne, was an Irish Catholic who worked in a meatpacking plant. Yeah. We remember that. Catherine Knight.
Yeah, that's,
I thought of
I didn't
that.
Even put like, that and that together. That's like, crazy, dude.
Man, like, I don't know about that. The women right? and the meatpacking plant, kind of crazy shit.
That's fucked up, man. Yeah, and his mom, they raised him like pretty well fucking Catholic and shit. They were super religious, and they like, you beat out the bad and beat in the good.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that a lot. I know a lot of movies kind of play on that whole thing, like the movie and the book Carrie from Stephen King. Yeah. With the just crazy religious parent mother in that case, like you said, just going over the top with it. You know, he was an altar boy when he was a little kid because of that, you know. But his father was just an abusive fucking drunk.
Like beat him and his siblings. Horribly. Like, because he had a couple siblings as well.
Yeah. He had an older brother, Florian, who literally is dead, beat to death right in front of him.
And then they fucking told the cops or whatever that he fell down the stairs. And, like, right in front of Richard, he beat his fucking brother to death.
Yeah, and both parents were just, and the mom, you know, she was in on it, too. She's like, he fell down the stairs.
Yeah, it's so fucked, dude.
Pretty fucked up to think of a parents being complacent in something like that is just awful, you know.
Beat my kid to death and you're gonna go along with he fell down the stairs, like,
right,
holy. And apparently his dad wasn't even that big of a dude.
No, not anything like he turned out.
He just fucking violent and strong
and mean, you know. So yeah, it's just a bad combination. But like you said, he had two other than Florian, who was killed. He had two, younger sister and a younger brother, Roberta and Joseph. And we were talking about this, Chris, when we were getting ready for the episode about Joseph. What's the deal with old Joey?
Old Joey. Oh, That.
Yeah, that guy.
Talking about the baseball thing?
No, about up on the roof with the 12-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah, his fucking brother. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. Yeah, him and actually Richard and his brother Joey actually spent time in the same prison after he got arrested and shit.
Right.
And fucking his brother ended up going in there for raping this 12-year-old girl on the roof of some fucking building. Then he threw her off the roof and fucking killed her.
Yeah,
threw
like
her
dog. Four stories.
Yeah, threw her dog off as well. But the dog lived. And so it's like yiping in pain. And that's how he got caught. But when he's in like fucking, when he's in prison with his brother, he's like, I don't even fucking like what he did was despicable.
Right.
But he did, I mean, he didn't rape a little girl, but he did a lot of fucking brutal shit, though.
Right. That was the thing with Kuklinski, is as bad as he was, he said he would never hurt a kid, and he probably wouldn't kill a woman.
Yeah, he had some kind of morals.
He left it open there, but yeah, so like you said, he wasn't doing that, and as we both know from doing this show and beyond with things we listen and watch, but, you know, inside the joint, those kind of guys don't get along real good.
Yeah.
And he got...
he got ass raped a lot.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where one of the things I watched or read said that he had to have like four or five different surgeries over the years...
to fix his asshole.
To repair his anus. And, oh, it was horrible. Yeah. I mean, he got what he deserved,
yeah,
man. Yeah, because that
sure
was terrible what he did. So yeah, Richard didn't have anything to do with his brother.
While they were in prison. And
served at the same time at the Trenton prison. But yeah, the fact that the dog got him caught, I thought was kind of fitting, because
right,
you know, he was a fucking piece of garbage.
Right.
But Richard meets and marries Barbara. He was really good to her, but man, he fucking raged the fuck out.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
I mean, he did some crazy
like
shit.
To get her to be with him, he basically like that she didn't really, she wanted to see other people or something.
Right.
And he's sitting in there in the car with her, and he just pulls his little fucking pocket knife out and just, like, jabs her. And he's like, no,
I know,
you're staying with me. Like, this dude just stabbed me and forced me. What?
Yeah, like, multiple times in, like, the back or the shoulder
blade
or
something.
Yeah, just,
like, his little pocket knife just jabbing at him. Like, no, you want me to get a bigger fucking knife?
Right. I mean, wow, if that wasn't a little prelude to what was about gonna happen, I don't know what the fuck was.
Like, for real.
Yeah, I mean, just really crazy. But, you know, he didn't, you know, she stayed with him, and they had three kids, Merrick, Kristen, and Dwayne, and they lived in Dumont, New Jersey, which is northern Jersey. He was very mean, just like his dad, really, in a lot of ways. Very unloving toward the son, which is strange.
Yeah, he loved his daughters.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh,
he loved it.
Worshipped
like,
them, yeah.
Not like as in pedophile shit or
right,
incest.
No, he genuinely
no, he
loved those kids.
Loved his fucking
yeah
kids.
And it's just weird how he was with Dwayne, but he was. He didn't do drugs. He didn't drink.
He didn't drink. He didn't gamble.
He didn't hook up with chicks or anything like that. He was very faithful to his wife.
He was a family man through and through.
Yeah, I mean, it was
in
really
that aspect,
odd,
was,
you know, how he had those quote-unquote morals to be
right
like that, but yet was literally killing people like constantly.
Do remember, didn't I read that, like, when Barbara originally got pregnant, he wanted her to get an abortion and shit. And
yeah
then he, like, punched her in the stomach trying to fucking kill the baby, and then it didn't work, obviously. But after
I
the kids were born, he's just like, all right, this is my life. This is
yeah
awesome.
Yeah, I think you are right. But like you, I read and watched quite a bit of stuff. But, yeah, that sounds right. And, you know, Barbara mentioned the whole good Richie, bad Richie
right
thing. You know,
right,
he was, like we've been saying, when he was good, he was a really... you'd think he was a great guy. I mean, he was very friendly to his neighbors. He had cookouts all the time.
Yeah, he fucking hung out with everybody.
Yeah.
He's just a normal dude. But
right.
The bad rich.
And when he was in a bad way, he would sulk. And so they could tell something was up.
Right.
You know, he was definitely not himself. And he was going through whatever. Maybe he had just done a hit. But he claimed, you know, the hits, like,
didn't bother him at all.
He didn't give a shit.
He was numb.
Like, completely, like, didn't care, didn't make him happy or sad, just didn't. It was a job. He did it, and he went home.
I went to work. I got paid.
Fucking, yeah.
And, like, Barbara even said, because he'd, like, if he got a call, he'd just up and leave or whatever. And Barbara's like, I never asked him what he was doing.
Right.
I got, Richard's doing Richard. That's
it. Yeah. And he was making, like, big big money, so she was probably like, whatever.
Yeah, you know, gets like, up at 2 in the morning out of nowhere and takes off. I'm not asking. Yeah. I don't fucking know.
Yeah,
fucking.
She's got wads of cash to go shopping with and do whatever, so can't say you blame her, really. But
if Sky White had taken the same freaking frame of mind.
Right. Right. That's fine. But as a kid, you know, going back, as a kid, he was picked on relentlessly, man.
Because he's kind of small.
He was when he was a kid. And he wore, like, clothes, like, three sizes too big because his parents didn't have money.
And they were poor and shit.
They bought clothes that were big so he would grow into them. And so he was just ridiculed. And there was one day he just had enough.
He went and got that fucking closet rod.
Yeah. He got this big... I don't know if it was metal or wood, but he came out.
There was like six kids there that had been fucking with him. And
he waited for the main dude, like at the entrance of where their projects were, because he lived in these big housing project. And the kid showed up and he was like, what do you got there? You know?
Yeah.
And he just beat him.
Beat him to death.
Literally to death. And I think he was 13 at the time.
Yeah, he's like, 13.
So
yeah.
He killed his first person at 13. And just was like, went back in and put the curtain rod in the closet.
He was 13 because he fucking went and stole a fucking car.
He did.
Stuffed this kid's body in the fucking trunk of the car, went and drove it somewhere and dumped his fucking body.
He drove to South Jersey where the Pine Barrens, where it's a lot of just like...
Just wooded areas.
Almost like swampy.
Oh, all right.
But pine, like scrub pine, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah,
he's 13 years old, dude.
Really?
Like, holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, at 13, I think I was like with a paper out and collecting baseball cards.
Him and shit, who did we just do? The little kid murderer, dude. Fucking god damn it. Why can't I think
Pomeroy.
Of his name? Pomeroy, yeah.
There you go. The kindred spirits, I guess. But he had a but when he did that, this quote from him I thought was interesting. He learned it was better to give than receive.
Yeah, that's when I learned it was better to give than to receive.
Yeah.
Given the ass whoopings.
Yeah, and I mean, he didn't stop. And the thing is he just, you know, didn't let any... If somebody got him upset, he'd beat him to fucking death. He'd wait
he
for him outside. He'd
beat
choke
him with pull cues,
shoot
fucking...
him. Yeah, I mean, knives. I mean, he was...
He just didn't give a shit.
He didn't give a shit.
He gave no... Like you said, this is a guy that had no fucks.
Exactly. And he was also just so nonchalant about it. He just, a lot of times, just leave them lay where they were.
Right.
Or just kick them. There was one, I remember, he threw him over, like, by the garbage at the dumpster. And he said he had a rope around the guy's neck. And he stood up and held it
over his shoulder
and, basically hung the dude.
Yeah, like fucking over, like back to back, basically.
Yeah.
They were like back to back. He's holding onto the rope like he's a backpack
and
shit.
And he was twitching. He talks about it. It's pretty fucked up. Yeah. I mean, that's a little inventive, I guess. You know,
he was pretty fucking inventive with some of the shit he did, though.
He was, but he fucking hated his dad, man. He just referred to him as Stanley.
Right.
He didn't go to his funeral later on when he dies. He just
he could not stand his dad. Like, his dad would like beat the shit out of him and his siblings and shit. Like,
yeah,
he'd take his belt and like wrap it around his hand. Like, not like brass knuckles, but imagine what it looks like that, and just start beating the kids. And
bad.
He hit Richard so hard one time and knocked him out for like fucking like 12 hours or some shit.
Oh,
like,
wow.
There's 3 hours. It might have only been only three hours.
Yeah.
But
he was out.
Yeah. He fucking he would beat the fuck out of him. And his mom would use like a broomstick. He said
his
mom
broke him over his head and shit.
Yes, his mom beat him broomsticks so they break.
Yeah, so he had a lot of anger.
Yeah, he had a good childhood.
Yeah, so there you know, when you wonder what makes these people tick, I mean, there you go. So he gets this job working for like a place that made video or a reel to reel like movies and packaged them up and shipped them out. And he starts making copies of these movies
and
selling
them. And it's all porn.
Yeah, it's all porn. And it's like nasty shit, too, like bestiality and stuff like
that. And he's bootlegging them and selling them to people. Fucking.
And that's how he starts getting hooked up with the mob. Because the mafia was all into the porn business. Big money.
Yeah,
that
was one of the ways they made their money back in the
70s. Stupid money back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 70s, you know, prime time for that sort of thing.
Big old hairy bush.
Yeah, exactly. So he starts getting like hardcore, pun intended, into the porn thing. And he's, you know, wheeling and dealing and selling like semi-fulls of this shit. And there's even some of them that he works with that are actually making the videos.
Right.
Like they're like producing them. So he's all in the thick of it. But he wasn't into watching it or anything. He's just into making money.
He didn't watch the shit at all.
He thought it was gross or just perverted. Money. He just didn't have any interest in it.
Yeah.
He was solely doing it to make money.
This is making me money. I can take care of my family with it. Fucking, I don't give a shit. Like, I already killed somebody. Might as well fucking show some smut.
Right. And like you said, big old hairy bush.
Big old hairy bush.
Oh, man. So in 1954... though, he was going into New York City's famous, or infamous, I should say, Hell's Kitchen to kill random homeless people trying out his different
trying techniques and shit. Like, so fucking crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the police just thought it was like homeless killing homeless. They had no idea that it was a guy coming in from Jersey practicing. To do this. I mean, just fucked up, you know?
Homicidal practice, like, holy fuck.
Yeah, he called it his school. And he was learning the craft without being caught was his thing. So he continued killing, had a very bad rep, which, of course, drew the attention of the Gambino crime family, and specifically, though, Roy DeMeo.
Right, right.
Roy was a badass. He was a captain, I think, when Richard met him. He was a mobster, and he was very violent.
And he's the guy that wanted Richard to prove that he would kill no matter what.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. They
go for a little drive, and fucking DeMeo, he's just pretty much just like, I just want you to kill somebody. And they're driving down the road. This random guy walking down the street, walking his fucking dog.
Right.
He's like that guy. So fucking Kuklinski gets out of the fucking car. He walks past them. As soon as they get around past each other, he just pops homeboy in the head, gets in the car, and they drive away. He's like, all right, well, I guess you proved that you fucking kill anybody anytime, whatever. Right,
yeah, that's just, and you can hear that on those Iceman tapes.
Yeah, 100%. Like, on the HBO. Pops his dude for no reason.
Really just fucked up.
Other than, this guy's going to pay me. That's fucking crazy.
It's really fucked up, but he starts getting into some really sick shit, and this is when it gets good, because some of these hits are not just kill him, but like make him suffer. And in the book, The Iceman,
It's such a good book. This is a book that I've actually read.
You got to read this book. If you like this podcast about The Iceman, you got to read the book, because it is so fucked up.
There's a lot of detail in there that we're obviously not going to get into, but it is so fucking good.
I mean, there's a few, just quickly, where he takes this one guy and he like cuts him all over his body, and then he puts like salt. Like table salt.
It's a kosher salt. Don't know why that was an issue, but it had to be kosher salt.
Yeah, and he rubs it in the wounds, and the guy's fucking screaming.
Yeah.
And he like videotapes it and stuff sometimes so the people can see what he did.
Oh, he did some fucking brutal shit. The fucking, the dude in the cave.
Oh, that's my favorite. In Pennsylvania.
Dude.
He takes him to the cave. Well, what he was doing with some of these, he was using a tranquilizer gun.
Right, yeah.
And then grabbing him and taking him in the van.
And tie him up and shit.
And take him to this fucking place in Pennsylvania. And imagine you're coming to. And this big, like, 6'4" motherfucker.
He's fucking Sasquatch
he's
for
huge,
real.
Throwing you over his shoulder. Takes you into this cave.
Yeah, yeah.
Ties you up. Naked.
Not just ties you up with wet rawhide, which shrinks when it dries. Right. So it's going to cut into your fucking skin.
Right. And he does a little cutting, and then what comes out of the.
Then the rats come out.
Dude, and just did the rats last week.
I know, right.
That would have been a good tie in.
They fucking. But they ate him alive.
They literally ate him alive.
And he said that when he first found the caves and knew there was rats in there, he went out there for a while to fucking throw meat out there to see how long it would take for the rats to come out.
Yeah.
He trained his fucking squad of rats pretty much.
Yeah. And then there were a couple of where he went in there and they even took the bones.
Yeah.
I mean, they took the fucking entire thing.
Like, he said he'd come back a week or whatever later and there'd be like just bones basically because the rats ate fucking everything and then they'd take a fucking forearm bone or what the fuck ever and like gnaw on this.
I mean, think of how big these rats had to be to
cart that shit away, dude.
A femur. I mean, yeah. Dude. Pretty fucked up. So, but some of these, though, he would set up a tripod with a video.
And videotape it.
And videotape the whole thing and then show it to Roy. Couldn't even watch it. And Roy was fucked up.
Yeah.
But some of these people that paid, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, some of these hits, they wanted to see. And there was one where he cut the guy's tongue out and shoved it up his ass.
Shoved it up his ass, yeah.
Yeah, like really fucked up
shit. And then there was the one, the dude's with the truck that they hijacked. They had it out on his farm. And he fucking took the fucking road flares.
Oh, yeah. And
put it up on his fucking feet, fucking torched his
feet. Yeah, he wouldn't give up the
person. Wouldn't give up information. Then he fucking torched his fucking balls with a fucking road flare.
Burned his balls off with a road flare.
And then he went to the dick, and that's when dude finally broke. I mean, you fucking just got both of your feet torched. You got your balls literally burnt off. And when you get to the dick, that's when I'm like, no.
Yeah, first foot, I'm like, oh, fuck.
I mean, it doesn't matter. He was going to kill him no matter what anyway.
Right, but why go through all that?
Right, that's why torture yourself? You know you're dying. Why torture yourself?
Yeah, that's just fucked up. But yeah, that was a good one. He did some crazy shit, though. But if you want to hear about more of it, like I said, we mentioned the book, The Iceman by Philip Carlo. There are other ones, too. Yeah. But that one, Chris and I both read. Amazing.
Great fucking book.
The HBO specials are fantastic because that's where you actually see him on camera. And he's so, as a matter of fact, like whatever. Yeah,
talking about whatever, and he just doesn't.
Yeah, like he's talking about what he ate for dinner last night. You know, it's very fucked up.
Chewing that gum, though.
Yeah, the gum thing. And he said that when he was getting mad,
he would make
like a clicking noise in his mouth. And that was when he was like,
yeah,
he had like reached his fucking boiling
point.
It's
like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah. But he earned the Iceman nickname for two reasons. First, when he would kill people, sometimes, I thought this was interesting, he would freeze them, like in a deep freeze for
years. A year or two or whatever.
And then he would dump the body, so when
they
found it.
Which got him caught.
Right. But when he had done it before, it fooled them because they thought it was a fresh corpse.
Right,
because
he'd let it fall out and fucking.
But this time, when he got
caught, he threw it out too early in the corner. It was still frozen on the inside.
There was ice on the inside, so they knew something was up, and that's how. That was
one of the reasons
that led to his capture. But anyway, they in 85, you know, he starts killing his friends and shit. He's using cyanide.
Anybody who would fucking be able to narc him out or whatever. Yeah, the cyanide thing
was crazy because he learned that from that one dude, that Robert Prangier, the Mr. Softy.
Mr. Softy, yeah.
Dude driving around in
the
ice cream
truck. And he had bodies in the fucking freezers of the ice cream truck.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah, this guy was like just driving around the neighborhoods, but he somehow they meet. I don't remember how in the book, but they meet each other, and he's like, they're like kindred fucking spirits. And Prangier
was like a military, ex-military who knew a lot about like bombs and chemicals.
Right.
Like
I think
that.
He was like special forces, but he showed Kuklinski how to use cyanide. And man, that was
his
go-to shit.
He fucking dump it on, put it in people's food and they eat it. And that one guy, they went to the bathroom, put it on the food.
Right.
Next thing you know, dude's fucked up and it went off as a heart attack.
Yeah. I mean, there were some where he would like put it in a drink and he would spill his drink at a bar like, oh, excuse
me. My bad. I'm just drunk.
Get on the guy's shirt and it would soak into his skin and he would drop dead.
Fucking die of cyanide poisoning. Nobody fucking knows why.
And they said, I mean, they had a medical examiner on one of the ones I watched and he said, I mean, if the coroner is not looking for cyanide poisoning.
Not going to find it.
Not going to find it. It's very hard to find. So that was kind of crazy. But yeah, he's very creative with the cyanide. So you definitely want to check that out if you like the story. But
the Ice Man, I don't know, dude. When I first read this book, I gotta give a shout out to Timmy Rowe for giving me this book in the first place. Because goddamn it,
yeah, it's a good one. But in 85, the cops name Operation Iceman. They established that because they were really on to him. I mean, the ATF, the FBI, the local police. There was an undercover agent, Dominic Polifrone, who worked with Detective Pat Kane for years trying to get evidence.
It's funny that he was undercover, and his undercover name was Dominic with a different last name.
Hold on. It's the stereotypical
fucking Italian shit.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, of course, with me having an Italian name, I've heard it. And there was actually an Altieri on one of the seasons of The Sopranos.
Oh, was it for real? Nice.
But he was only on like two episodes, and he was a rat. And they killed him and put a rat in his mouth. So that sucked, because it was like kind of cool to see my name in the show.
In the fucking show and shit. Yeah, and then fucking Dominic got fucking Richard on videotape talking some shit. Audio tape.
Yeah, he was
talking some shit.
He was mic'd up, and he got him talking about cyanide. And how
is it a clean way? I've seen people go to sleep and never wake up.
Yeah, I mean, Kuklinski definitely let his guard down with that Polifrone. He was just very convincing. He was really good at it. And I mean, he sets up meetings. He's wired up. And Kuklinski is arrested in a roadblock. They got him. They had a gun in the car.
They had evidence.
And they had all that evidence with the tape recordings and shit. So he was definitely in a world of shit. He winds up confessing to a couple of them. Barbara was originally thought to maybe have known what was up, but they realized
she didn't know shit. And they said when they arrested him, he was so big that they fucking could barely get the cuffs around his fucking, they got like one click on the cuff.
It took like four guys, they said, to cuff him up.
Yeah, he's a big motherfucker
for sure. But he was charged with five counts of murder, which were basically the close friends that he killed. And business partners.
Anybody that he thought might narc him out or whatever, snitch on him.
Yeah, he was killing them all. So, just like a lot of those, like, Goodfellas, you see those movies where they, start killing everybody.
And one of the other things that got him caught was he used cyanide on the one dude, but then he strangled him, too. So, there's ligature marks. And fucking, if he had not strangled him, too, they would have never found it as a murder.
Okay. They were baffled with the cyanide thing, but they got him, and he was given a $2 million bond, had to surrender his passport, and they said, he had a lot of money in Swiss accounts, and he was making all those trips to Zurich. He really liked Switzerland, and really loved going over there, and he was going over there a lot. So they knew he could have left at a moment's notice.
They take that passport, you're out. Yeah,
so they're not letting him go. March of 88, he's found guilty of only two of the murders, and he wasn't eligible for parole until he would be 110. So in essence,
he was never
going to
get out. Yeah, he's got life.
Yeah, they weren't going to. He wasn't going to get out. And the reason why they didn't give him the death penalty was because the jurors felt there was enough uncertainty as to was he alone, were other people
involved with what did he do it all himself
right, so they were at least lenient there, but they were just like
essentially he got life in prison,
right? Exactly. He did. Now, one of the things I thought was interesting in the interviews is there was one of them where they asked him about Jimmy Hoffa, and of course everybody that's follows any of the old mobster stories,
anything like that, who Hoffa is.
Yeah, and where did he go? I mean, nobody ever found him, and so
he's in some concrete somewhere.
Well, they asked Kuklinski about it, and he kind of smiles, and he said, I might know a thing or two. And he said he heard, and of course, he knows, but he's just trying to be cute about it.
Yeah.
But he said that they put him in a drum, and then I guess they had to move the drum and put him in a trunk of a car, and he was crushed. And he said he's probably in somebody's Japanese car right now. And that's all he said about it. Yeah, and that fucked up.
Great.
So, yeah, fucking Iceman cracking jokes and being kind of the celebrity of that those HBO specials. I mean, as dry as he is, he still does have
fucking spark to it. It's fucking great.
It's fucked up.
And just watching him though talk, dude, it's like,
I know, man.
You are literally cold as fucking ice.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that was the other reason why they called him the Iceman, because just that.
Literally fucking cold as fucking ice.
Ice in his veins, man. But he dies at age 70 in 2006 after his wife refused to rescind the DNR, the Do Not Resuscitate.
And he said
he wanted to live.
Yeah, he wanted to live.
But she's like, his wife's like, no.
Yeah, just fucking die.
I'm done with you now. So she doesn't. So she doesn't rescind because he had the DNR and he wanted her to rescind it. But she's like, nope. Not going to do it. So later, he dies.
You fucked our whole lives up.
Yeah. And he dies of some disease where the blood vessels swelled up or something like that. So lots of stuff for the research here. Lots of stuff on YouTube. I mean, all those HBO. There's
all kinds of documentaries.
Couple of hours of just the HBO shit.
It's fucking awesome.
It's fantastic. So definitely, if you're interested in this, check that out. Again, the book that we read, The Iceman, Confessions of a Mafia Contract Killer by Philip Carlo, was fantastic.
Such a good fucking book. And there's pictures in it.
Yeah,
and
lots of good pictures.
It's fucking... It's a great book. I recommend it. And I'm not a huge reader. You know that. I listen to shit. But I read this book, and I recommend it, like, greatly.
Yeah, if you like this topic, definitely check the book out. Now, next time, and we've got a couple of weeks because we're doing bonus episodes here coming up, but the next time we do a murder segment, we're going to do the West Memphis 3.
That'll be the fresh one.
Yeah, we were talking about we really wanted to do that story, and so we are going to do it. West Memphis 3 next time, so we'll see you then.
Death Angel.
Fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, speaking of Death Angel, I'm going to reiterate Full Terror Assault coming up September 6th, 7th,
and 8th. Yeah, there was a method to my madness. And also, I played this song for my son Joe because he's a huge Death Angel fan. But yeah, what do you got for...
But yeah, fucking, like I said, as I've said in past episodes, Full Terror Assault coming up September 6th, 7th, 8th, Death Angel. Fucking Skinless, my homeboy Joey Gormonger. Damn. Fucking one of my favorite band names.
Joey's playing too.
Yeah, Joey's playing too. Nice. Yeah. Fucking one of my favorite band names ever, Handsome Prick. They're fucking playing Sexual Atrocities, just 3 days of camping, metal, and just good fun. So look into it, people. Get some tickets.
Yeah, what was the dates of that again?
September 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Fuck yeah. And, man, coming off of bloodshed in the country.
Yeah, dude.
You guys are going to be fucking hurt.
Fuck, yeah, it's going to be rough. Yeah, it's in Cave-In Rock, Illinois. It's southern Illinois, close to Kentucky. So anybody around the southern Illinois, anywhere you want, just drive.
Yeah, it sounds like a good fucking time.
Camping and metal, though, dude. That's my fucking shit.
Yeah. I'm not a camping person only because the military, the Army specifically, broke me of that. I used to like to camp until I had to do it for like weeks.
Yeah.
And my fucking nutsack smelled like a fucking dumpster. It was fucking gnarly, man. Doing a whore's bath just did not fucking cut it.
No, it ain't
going
to work.
It was awful. And so that broke me of that. Right. Unless I'm in like some nice digs. But then you're not camping. So.
No.
So you're staying in a hotel, basically.
Yeah, you know. Pretty much.
And then the other thing the Army broke me of any enjoyment in is shooting guns. Because I used to, you know, be cool with shooting guns. My dad had guns. It was all right. But yeah, when you had to do it all the time to qualify, I had to qualify on a fucking M16, a 9mm. A 50 cal, the M60.
It's like, this just ain't fun anymore, man.
The hand grenade. It was awful. And you spent like the whole day at the range trying to get it all done. And you had to do it like every 6 months. It was just a pain in the ass. So anyway, Thank you, U.S. Army, for that. But is there anything else about Full Terror Assault you wanted to mention?
That's basically what I got for Full Terror Assault. I'm going to be out there. I'm fucking going to take a recorder, and I'm going to see if I can get some fucking interviews with bands and whatnot and see what I can do, anything to add to the show and let people hear new shit. So
that's cool, man. Well, that sounds good. Going to be a good show. So we've got this interview piece we're going to play from an interview we did with the bass player Joey Vera. Check this out. I have the pleasure of speaking to Joey Vera, bass playing beast from Armored Saint and Fate's Warning. Such a pleasure, Joey. I've been a fan since March of the Saint came out. I saw you guys on tour with Metallica and Wasp at the Agora Ballroom in Hartford, Connecticut. It was incredible. Totally got me into the more underground metal scene, and just from there I went crazy. So as a metalhead, I wanted to say thank you for your contribution to the cause. I see you guys just did the U.S. tour for the Armored Saint Symbol of Salvation tour. And how did that go? I heard that the crowds were great.
Yeah, it went very well. I just got home the other night, yesterday, in fact. And the crowds were amazing. We had a great time everywhere. The response was far beyond what we expected. And we had a lot of fun playing this record in its entirety. That was something that was totally unknown for us. But everything went really well.
That's really cool. I saw, I think, one track or one song you guys did at one of the shows on YouTube, and it sounded killer, even like that. So I'm sure it was awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good vibes all the way around. It was great.
That's awesome. Now, beyond this, I know you guys are doing something in Europe, right?
Yeah, we're actually week after next, we're flying out to Europe to do a few shows with this same symbol thing. There's two festivals that we're playing. One is the Brutal Assault Festival in the Czech Republic, and the other one is Alcatraz Festival in Belgium. And nice. Those we're going to do a condensed kind of version of the symbol tour, but then we're doing a handful of headline shows around it, a couple in Germany and a couple in the Netherlands, and those we're doing the full Symbol of Salvation thing again.
Oh, cool.
And we're only gone, like, I don't know, 9 days or something. So it's relatively short. And then we come back from that, and literally a couple days after that, we do three shows on the West Coast here, one in L.A., one in Anaheim, and one in Vegas. And that's where we're continuing to do the symbol touring then. And then we are doing this whole thing all over again back in Europe, but a little more of an extensive run in November. And wow. So we're going back to Europe in November and, you know, hitting some of the same places, Germany and Holland, but also going to some places we've never been, such as Hungary and playing in Prague. And
man.
And a couple of shows in Italy and Switzerland. So it's a little more extensive, and we'll be doing Symbol there as well.
Wow. That's awesome, yeah. Man. I didn't realize it was going on that long. That's pretty cool, man. That's great.
Yeah. We felt like, you know, Europe was kind of getting snubbed from the Symbol run. We got a lot of mail saying, hey, what about us? You know, so
right.
So we're doing some stuff over there for the Europeans, because, you know, Europe's been very supportive of our career. So,
oh yeah.
So we're still having fun with it, and it's been going well. We actually recorded a video the show in New York on this last run, you know, a multi-camera thing. So the idea is to kind of put out a product of, I don't know, a DVD of some sort. Yeah.
Oh man, that'd be great.
Of the show and all the live audio and maybe some bonus stuff. So
right.
That'll be for sometime in the future, but we're just having fun with it right now. It's going well.
That's really cool, man. I got to say, too, just changing track slightly, the new Live Fate's Warning live over Europe is unbelievable. It sounds so good. I had the pleasure of seeing you guys on the tour when you guys played Joliet, and the new stuff was just so incredible live, and you guys really captured it on there. But how is that response to Fate's Warning over there in Europe?
That's been really good. I mean, I've been getting a lot of comments everywhere I go. People just love the new record. They do make a comment on the sound of it and the production and also just the song performances and everything. And we're really happy with it. We think it turned out great. It was really, it was like we felt really proud that we went out and did all of these songs, you know. It was a lot of material to learn and a lot of material to pull off live. And it was a lot of hard work, but it really paid off in the end. I think it was it came out really good, and we're all super proud of it.
That's amazing. Yeah, I actually get a brief conversation with Joe DeBias when he had to play those few dates. And he said, my God, this new stuff is insane. He definitely was challenged, and I, as a bass player, man, I've always appreciated your abilities, but man, the tone on that album, and always when I've seen you live, is just absolutely killer.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem, man. It's great to hear a bass tone that really pops, but it's not overbearing. It's just, like I said, it's just very tasteful.
All right. What did you guys think of that? I think hopefully.
It's just a little taste.
Yeah, just a little sliver of that.
Yeah. You'll get the whole thing.
Right. We're going to do a bonus episode with the entire thing. But right there, Joey really gets into a long discussion about his gear.
Right. Yeah, it's a good interview, though, man.
And, I think Joey was a lot of fun there, and he's got a good sense of humor. And we went through a lot of friggin' bullshit because I was supposed to call him the day before, 2 days before he was on tour in Milwaukee, and he had no signal. So it was like,
saying all the vowels and
shit. It
was
so painful to sit there because I knew how I know how frustrating that is, you know, from him. And I'm here at my house, you know, with the solid, you know, landline signal. And, you know, it's usually, you know, pretty strong. So I knew it wasn't on my end, but it was just, it was painful. Right. But he was a great sport, and we arranged it the day after he got home. And so it was a little better situation the second time around. So, yeah, you'll be able to hear.
It's a good vent. It sounds good. It's a great interview. So, yeah.
Fuck yeah. And you had some stuff to talk about.
Obviously, I had aforementioned FTA, Full Terror Assault, but also, Gormonger and Menstrual Disc Consumed are doing a split. They're from Menstrual Disc Consumed. They're from Indonesia. They're doing a split called Disgorging Putrid Chapter, and it's set to be released in September. There's not a date, but it's going to be released in September. So if you just go get on Facebook and go to the Gormonger page on Facebook, he can keep you updated on that.
That's cool.
And fucking, so check
that
out.
Sounds like a family, like a put something to put on a Christmas list.
100%.
You know, I mean, 100%. Grandma would love that shit. Buy two.
Dude, I love the fact that I've had my fucking daughter doing vocals on Gormonger songs, dude.
That's pretty funny, man. That's brutal.
And then also, coming November, I just seen that the Black Dahlia Murder is going on tour, and they're going to be traveling all over the country, obviously, with fucking Pig Destroyer and Devourment, and so that should be a pretty fucking good ass show there.
I've seen Black Dahlia Murder a couple times. I think they opened for King Diamond once. They were really good.
Yeah, they're pretty fucking badass.
They are badass. That's cool, man. Well, we've got CK coming up with his segment. He does a little thing on Armored Saint, which is Joey was talking about, one of his bands, and so
take it away, CK.
There you go. All right, got CK here from Danbury, Connecticut, doing another one of these Skype discussions with you, Chris, to talk about Little Armored Saint. So what do you...
Hell yeah.
What do you got to say for yourself, man? Danbury's still number two behind Bloomington.
Should be number one, but I'm not going to, you know, I'll take number two.
Yeah, and Omaha, Nebraska has been catching up and tied with you guys, so that's kind of crazy.
Where the
hell random.
They come from?
I don't know. I mean, very random how these cities just pop into that top 10 list. So The one that really kills me is Belgrade, fucking Serbia. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, really? Like, do they just like listen to American podcasts over there? I guess. I don't know.
I guess they do.
Apparently.
Maybe they have a murder metal mayhem parties.
You never know. They could. They could. There could be, you know, a lot of fans over there. That's why I told Shaw back, maybe we should consider a fucking Middle Eastern tour and do Pakistan. Because Pakistan's in the fucking top countries list and Serbia. And then in and out of it's been fucking Cameroon, so I guess we can hit fucking Africa while we're over there. You know?
What the fuck?
It's fucking insane.
It's awesome, though.
It is. It's great, you know. It's crazy. So, yeah.
Gotta love it.
We got some people listening, so they want to hear about Armored Saint, because we just played the Joey Vera interview, and at least an excerpt from it. And so, so you and I both talked, you know, about this and wanted to do some Armored Saint talking, so... What say you?
So, if anybody is unaware, Armored Saint is an American metal band. They come from the Los Angeles area, which is kind of weird because at that time when they formed was 82, I believe.
Right.
And, you know, they were kind of like the odd band out, I think, in the scene at that time, because you had, you know, your Motley Crue's, your Wasp, your... What we call your poser bands, right. Mostly
hair metal crap, yeah.
That area, you know, even though you did have Slayer and Metallica did come out of Los Angeles, but relocated to the Bay Area,
right?
But Armored Saint, they formed, I believe, in '82, and it was Joey Vera, John Bush, and the Sandoval brothers, Gonzo and Phil. No, again, and they were originally on the Metal Massacre 2, I believe. They had a tune on there. And Brian Schlegel put out a 3-song EP by him a little bit after that, which gained a little bit of attention. And I guess it gained enough attention to where they got signed to Chrysalis Records. So they were actually signed to a major for a while, you know.
Yeah, that first March of the Saint was on Chrysalis, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first three. March of the Saint, which was their debut, had a minor, little minor hit with the video with Can You Deliver?
Right.
You know, and I think with Armored Saint at that time, they were just trying to find their spot in the metal world, and I think they were having a little bit of trouble because that came out in 84 and you just had to basically had the thrash thing starting.
Yeah.
You know, so, and they may have been the odd band out because they weren't thrash. They were a typical traditional, I guess, metal band. They put out a great album, March of the Saint, in 84.
And then they toured. And I brought this up with Joey, toured with Metallica and Wasp on that.
Yep, and
I remember being at that show. It was so fucking amazing, man.
I was too, and if I remember correctly, I believe it was snowing that night.
It was snowing that night. It was a bad blizzard because there wasn't that many people there, which was amazing. Right. You got fucking Metallica there for Ride the Lightning. And then Armored Saint for, you know, March of the Saint, and then whatever album, you know, Wasp had just put out, and they were at their, you know, pretty much their rise, you know, at the very beginning there. So you had three really great bands playing that show.
Right. It was an awesome show. It was phenomenal. At the old Agora West Hartford Ballroom, I believe.
Yes, it was at the Agora.
Yeah, but I mean, that album came out, it did relatively well, I guess. You know, it didn't set the world on fire, but it did relatively well. It was a great album, solid songs. 85, they had Delirious Nomad, which was a step above March of the Saint. Probably my favorite Armored Saint album, one of them anyway, is that album. You know, gaining a little bit more attention. 87, they had Raising Fear. And that was the last album that they had put out by Chrysalis. I guess Chrysalis lost faith in them and dropped them. And after that time, Dave Pritchard, who was the guitarist, one of the guitarists who eventually joined the band right before the first album, they discovered he had leukemia.
Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, and Dave and
they were recording, weren't they? They were doing Symbol of Salvation, yeah, weren't they?
They were demoing. They're demoing songs. And Dave was a phenomenal player. I mean, his leads were, he was just a great lead guitarist, and he had a great tone for melody.
Yeah.
I mean, you listen to any of those three albums, and even the album that he wasn't on, but they used songs that he wrote. He had a great ear for melody and a hook. Right. You know, they were demoing the songs for Symbol of Salvation, which is, you know, basically the album I'm going to talk about. And he passed away, unfortunately, in 90. Right. And 91, they recruited Jeff Duncan from the band Odin to replace Dave.
Right.
Metal Blade re-signed him after putting out that EP and I'm Going to Chrysalis. So Metal Blade, again, as always,
yep.
Brian Schlegel's the man who, you know,
sweeps in.
Yep. And put out what I think is the best album that they've ever put out, with Symbol of Salvation.
That album kills it, dude. I've been listening to that almost nonstop on Google Play. And since I was doing the interview with Joey, I was kind of getting pumped up and listening to it again after a long time of not hearing it. And oh my God, it's so good, man. Every song is good on that one. And the production is excellent.
Dave Jordan produced that one. And he went on to produce other bands that were pretty big. And that was their Power Slave, their Master of Puppets.
Right.
You know,
Rain and Blood.
Exactly. That was their album. And unfortunately, when they toured, I remember seeing them at Toad's Place and never got it, but they never drew a crowd.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know, I remember going to that show and sadly, they played for free because enough tickets weren't sold.
Oh, wow. That's weird. Yeah. You know, I'd only seen them the one time, so I didn't see them on that tour, but I know they said they didn't get much of a tour, which is why they're doing what they're doing now, you know.
And they played in front of like maybe 100 people.
Wow.
And it was, they put on a fucking great show for that tour. You know, and after that, I think everybody knows pretty much that they went on a hiatus.
Right.
Slash broke up. You know, obviously, John Bush joined Anthrax for those years. Joey Vera put out a solo album, joined Fate's Warning.
Right.
Which, oddly enough, I remember seeing Joey Vera on the Parallels tour, I believe, for Fate's Warning, where he filled in for Joey DeBias.
Right.
Because Joey's mother or father passed away.
I think it was his mom, yeah.
Yeah, and Joey Vera was playing with the sheet music. That's how.
Yeah, we talked about that in the interview because I was like his backup if he didn't make it, and he was talking about how he was working with Jim out in the van or whatever they were using at the time to go over all the songs because, I mean, that's not stuff you can just jump in and play like that.
No,
you know?
And he's a virtuoso, Joey.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's a total virtuoso. You know, and I remember meeting him in 2013 at when I saw Fate's Warning out, and I, thanks to you, I was part of the, I got to spend a day with all those guys. You know?
That was cool. I was glad to do it.
And Joey Vera was a cool motherfucker, man. I'll never forget it.
He is a really cool guy, and people that hear the interview will know about what we're talking about.
And with him and along with the other guys, down-to-earth people, and you know, I talked to him about Armored Saint, you know, and it was just awesome, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
And you know, so Armored Saint was on hiatus for a bunch of years. And they, you know, they did put out other albums. They had the Revelation album, I think, came out in 2000 or 19. Crap. 19, let me refresh my memory. 2000. I'm sorry, year 2000 they came out with that. Then they came out a Nod to the Old School, which was a compilation of demos, B-sides, the actual three-song EP from Metal Blade is on there.
Oh, that's cool.
2010, they had the album La Raza, and they just came out a couple years ago with Wind Hand Down in 2015, which is an incredible album.
Yeah, that's really good.
But the main thing here is they did reissue Symbol of Salvation. They reissued it in 2000 on a 3-CD box set, and they just reissued it on vinyl on CD again this year to celebrate the anniversary for the tour.
Nice.
Newly remastered. Again, I said, you know, just because you hear remastered, don't think that sounds better, but this does sound phenomenally well because it is Metal Blade. And as everybody knows, Metal Blade does a phenomenal job when they reissue stuff.
Yes.
Colored vinyl sounds phenomenal. If I would definitely recommend picking these either the vinyl or the CD up. CD has bonus tracks. Vinyl just has the main album, but both sound amazing. Great album. Classic Armored Saint. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, they're such a great band and so underrated. You know, we talked about King's X. You know, we've talked about some of these bands that just never really seem to make it.
And they're another one.
Yeah.
Armored Saint is another band.
I know. I mean, it's a shame because you listen to them and John Bush is fucking unbelievable. I mean, I remember reading here recently that they wanted him in Metallica.
Yeah, they wanted,
because Hetfield didn't think he could handle it, and right, fucking, and that's like, that would have been weird, hearing John Bush singing Metallica. And of course, as you mentioned, he was in Anthrax for a bit, and that's a cool, you know, different take on Anthrax with him.
And I think his stuff in Anthrax, his albums with Anthrax were phenomenal.
Oh man, he's a great singer. I mean, he's like the quintessential metal singer. He just kicks ass.
Right. He's got a great voice. He doesn't have a huge range, but it fits a lot of things, you know, fit Anthrax at the time. You know, he's a great singer, and you know, the guitarist, you have Phil Sandoval and Jeff Duncan, great guitarist. Dave Pritchard, as I mentioned, he's phenomenal. And Gonzo's a great drummer. And you put them all together, it's like an explosion. And just people just never got into it or were not exposed. So I don't know if just with the labels.
Yeah, I think it's a timing thing with them because they should have been a lot bigger than they were. Like you said, it's like an all-star team of musicians. Every fucking instrument was just killing it.
Right.
And for some reason, you know, I don't, who knows, timing, like you said, label shit, other bands coming out at the work, you know, at times maybe where that they got stepped on, quote unquote, you know, who knows, but certainly not worth, or they were worth far more than what they got, I think, you know.
Right. It just goes to show, just because you have talent, unfortunately, it's not going to make you a household name or make you $1 million doing what you love to do, unfortunately. And sometimes you got to do it just for the love of music.
Right. And they certainly do, because they're at it. They're touring like crazy, as people will hear with the Joey Vera interview. So, yeah, it's one of those common stories we hear. But as true metalheads, we certainly can appreciate it. And as Joey says, he's a lifer, man. He's doing this shit till he can't do it anymore.
He's lucky. He's making a living at it. Right. So, you know.
He says it's tough, though. I mean, it's really tough to do.
I know he plays with Scott Ian's wife, Pearl.
Right.
In her band. So I know he does other things besides Armored Saint and Fate's Warning. And so
he's just great. So,
you know,
I'm glad we were able to do this about Armored Saint. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I keep on reading all these. I just want to give a warning to people who are buying vinyl. you see these picture discs going on sale, reissues. Please be careful when you're buying them, because what you're buying a wall hanger is what you're buying.
Right.
And I'm going to be honest with you. The quality of the vinyl isn't that good, and they're only good for a couple listens.
Oh, wow.
So
really?
if you're willing to spend a $25-$30 for the album, I know Metal Blade has reissued the King Diamond stuff on picture disc.
Right.
It looks great. If you're doing it for wall art or, you know,
like a display or something.
Yeah. If you're doing it just to listen to, be careful, because the quality isn't all that great on picture discs. The way they manufacture them, it's a known fact that it's manufactured on cheaper vinyl. It wears quicker. It has a lot more surface noise. I just want to put that warning out there.
No, that's good to know. I would have never known that. I've got a few old picture discs myself, but I don't play them at all. But that's good to know, because, yeah, we don't want people buying stuff and they think something else. But they are cool to look at. And like you said, if it's some sort of collection or a display, then that might be worth what you're paying for it.
Yeah,
but
go
if
for it.
To listen to, then maybe not.
But I just want to, you know, I've just been seeing a lot of reissues of stuff like that, and I don't want people to think, well, oh, looks awesome.
Right.
You're paying money for something that after a couple listens is going to sound like totally like garbage.
Right. Well, we appreciate that, CK, always, and good to hear from you, and always good to talk about some metal.
All right.
All right.
Again, thank you for letting me do my little segment. Loving it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
All right, dude. Armored Saint, man.
Hell yeah. Rain of Fire. I was just actually last week on the way out here, dude. I was listening to that.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Yeah, Symbol of Salvation is such an amazing album. And as Joey was saying, that they're doing the tour for that, even though it came out in 90 or 91. That's just awesome.
So, yeah, dude, that's fucking so fucking great.
Yeah, and it's really
cool. I love
cool.
it when bands do that shit, though, man.
Yeah, the reunion thing. And then they also, the guitar player, Dave Pritchard, who died of leukemia while they were, like, doing the demos for that album. And the one video on YouTube I saw them playing, and they had a picture of Dave, like, propped up against one of the
that's
amps.
That's fucking cool
so
shit.
So it was like he was there.
Yeah, that's cool
and
shit.
And John Bush, the singer, brought it up, and it was super fucking
cool.
Yeah,
that's
so
fucking cool shit.
They're just great guys. So I just love that band. But we're going to be at Shaker's Cigar Bar. We've been talking about this.
We're actually going this week.
Yeah, I mean, by the time this airs, which will be airs or live or however you call it nowadays.
When you're able to hear it.
Yes, there you go. It'll be the day we're there. So Thursday.
Yeah, that's when we're recording everything.
August 2nd, we'll be at Shaker's Cigar Bar in Milwaukee doing a remote podcast. So we'll be recording us. We'll be talking
interviewing
with
staff members, doing the Cannibal tour, the Cream Seated Cannibal tour, recording stuff on that.
Right. And then we're going to be talking with Professor Pinkerton, who's got the Dead Man's Carnival, is going to be down there.
Yeah.
And
the Horror Hoes are going to be there too,
and the
bro.
The Horror Hoes.
I can't wait to meet these ladies, dude, because they're good. If you haven't heard the Horror Hoes podcast, check them girls out. They're awesome, man.
They are awesome. They're based up in Milwaukee, and they gave us a shout out last time on their show. So, ladies, tip of the cap to you. We're looking forward to it. See you guys very, very soon. So, yeah, it's going to be a great time. And then after the place closes down, we're going to stay the night. And they do this there where you could rent out the top third floor suite.
Yeah, where the Dead Hooker was.
The Dead Hooker suite is what they call it. But the story goes that there was a prostitute up there that was murdered. Because when Bob bought the place in the 80s, when they were renovating, they actually found bones, if you remember that.
Yeah, they found the skeleton from the Bob interview.
Yeah, when Bob did the interview, you can look back at which podcast that was, Bob Weiss. He said that, yeah, they found these bones, called the police.
And the forensics said they were like at least like 70 years old or some shit like that.
And it was a female. They were female human bones. And they were about 70 years old, so the math was about right.
So, yeah, look forward to that shit. Rick.
It's going to be crazy. I've actually spent the night up there once, and it was by myself, which was kind of fucked up. And I'm not scared of that kind of stuff, but being you're alone in a building that old with that much history definitely is creepy.
Lod, yeah.
So having you guys with me this time won't be quite as fucked up. We'll have a good time. It won't be quite as weird. Because, yeah. I mean, when they shut that door, it's like...
Done. You either stay here or you go home.
Damn.
And we're 3.5 hours from home. So.
Right. So we're going to be doing the remote, and then we're going to have people with the handheld recorders and stuff to see if we can capture anything interesting. So we'll see what happens. It should be fun. So that's going to be a really cool deal. And
we got that new merch coming, though, bro.
We do, man. Dave at the t-shirt place, Faceless Screen Print in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Oh, man. They did a great job. They sent us pics.
He's so awesome that he didn't like the way they came out originally, and he fucking redid it. Like, it's so fucking sweet.
He wanted the front of the shirts to look great, and they do. Dave took the extra time to dial it in. It looks so amazing in the pictures. I can't wait to get one.
Yeah, they're fucking awesome.
But it's got the gray logo, the Jeff Gaither logo, but that blood spatter.
Blood spatter looks fucking
so
great, dude.
Wicked. It looks really cool. And it's as big as it can be on the front. So it's a big fucking murder metal mayhem blood spatter on the front.
And it's got the heads on the back with
the heads fucking, that everybody seems to dig, man.
And get your murder on underneath and
get your murder on. So they look really good. Dave said he can't get over how good
they
look.
The koozies look cool as fuck, too.
The koozies are really cool. Red. Koozies with Murder Metal Mayhem logo sideways
in black and the heads. Yeah, they're fucking great.
Yeah, and it says "Get Your Murder On" on the koozie also.
Yeah, so it's fucking sweet and fucking.
We're gonna have links where you can buy the merch on our Facebook page,
use PayPal or whatever.
Yeah, we're working on a website. We've actually hired a designer, so process now. Thank God.
Thank you, Steve Tooley.
Yeah, Steve is the shit. We met with him on
Sunday. Yeah,
and talked to him about doing a commercial for the podcast. So
for the podcast, and also for your authorship. Also for your writing and
He's gonna do one for my new book coming out, The Dreadful Lives of Enoch Strange. That will be a commercial, and then he's gonna completely build a website for us for the podcast, and he's gonna revamp my website for my writing. So Steve is gonna be like in the thick of it, and it should be really fun because, like you said, Chris, he's a really good dude.
No,
he's from Fairbury,
awesome. Yeah, like
Illinois, which is very close by, and he had contacted me specific to my writing because he was interested in doing a short based on one of my short stories. And so we got talking, and then I got thinking, man, you know, we could really use a guy that could do shit like this. So,
and he's super knowledgeable, obviously. Like, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, and he's a metalhead, which is awesome.
Yeah, and he's a metalhead.
Yeah, because, you know, to deal with us, that is at least like a bare minimum. Because it's going to be a rough fucking, you know, few hours or days or however long it takes.
For sure. Steve Tooley. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So, Steve, kick ass. Looking forward to working with you. And then...
talking about Fairbury, though, dude.
Yeah. What about Fairbury's in the news? All over my fucking feed,
dude,
man.
All right. I'm going to put this in the fucking mayhem segment because it ain't metal. It's just hilarious. So Fairbury, Illinois, that's where I grew up. Tiny-ass fucking farm town.
Right.
Tiny-ass farm town. But they have one of the biggest dirt track races in the country called the Prairie Dirt Classic. So this dude, DJ Ashba, that's it. Yeah. DJ Ashba. He played guitar with Guns N' Roses for a while he grew up in Fairbury.
Right.
That's so fucking crazy. So for the Prairie Dirt Classic this year, they brought him to town to play the national anthem on his guitar and shit. Right.
Which was nice of him.
No, you know that's fucking awesome. That's it's cool. His
he's supposed to be a really good dude. I've talked to a few people that know him. Right, he's right. Like really, really down to earth.
He's fucking... I don't know who the fuck dude is, but like...
Right.
He's cool as shit, I guess. He fucking came back to Fairbury being a big old rock star or whatnot. Fucking,
right. Play the national anthem at the race. The
fucking race. So then he gets pulled over for fucking running a goddamn stop sign and gets a DUI in Fairbury fucking Illinois. This dude could be out in L.A. right now, but he went to Fairbury and fucking got a DUI. His mugshot at the fucking Livingston County fucking police department is hilarious.
Yeah, I thought that was crazy because I saw that he got arrested in a DUI. But, I mean, you know, I know he's from here and I know who he is. That's about the extent of it. So I saw, well, big deal. You know, he got arrested for a DUI. But then I saw it was in Fairbury.
Fucking I'm like, Fairbury.
He's from Fairbury. That's so fucked up. Like, why would they do that to him? Like, come on, man. God,
that, I just played the fucking national anthem.
Right.
At the event that triples the population of your town. Like, that ain't no bullshit.
No, I know it's not.
Like, that Prairie Dirt Classic, they bring... There's,
yeah, it's a, it it's literally a huge triples event.
The fucking population of that town.
Yeah, it's a huge event, for sure. So that's funny. Yeah. And then you had something else you wanted to talk about. Yeah, I had
a little story for this little mayhem segment that we do.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to throw it all the way back to when me and Mike were living in the apartment above Paulie's again. Fucking enough.
A lot of bad shit happened up. That's where Crazy Mike got titty milk sprayed on him. Dude. Up there. He did. He was like in fucking heaven, man. He was all.
I remember that. Yeah, no, there was like I milk all over the fucking
camera
that.
And shit. It's kind of nasty. All
right, so like, I don't know what to call this story other than fucking surfing the stairs.
Nice.
So like, obviously, we lived upstairs. Me and my brother had this apartment upstairs above Paulie's, this bar in downtown Bloomington. And fucking Psycho Stick was playing with Look What I Did, Power Glove, and a local band from back in the day called Dipshit McGee.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
It was all good. It was all fun. Fucking great ass fucking party. Actually, fucking. They covered Dipshit fucking covered the Three Little Pigs, Green Jello.
Oh, nice.
And I actually got to do vocals with them on it. So that was fucking cool. Yeah, that was fun as shit, dude. It was fucking great.
Nice.
So everybody's fucking partying, hanging out fucking during the show and everything. Fucking, well, me and Michael being me and Michael, we have the fucking after party upstairs at our apartment.
Of course.
Fucking, so everybody, we got a keg up there and everything, and there's like so many people there. So we decide that it's a good idea to take the bifold door off of the fucking closet, right?
Oh yeah, that's a very good idea. When
you're drunk and you're taking a bifold door off of something, you're like, bad things are gonna motherfucking happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
yeah,
for real.
I could just see this like a softball like arced in the air and like laces just gently spinning as I'm ready to fucking jack it out.
Hell yeah.
That's
dude.
What this is. Yeah, I could see this.
Pretty much what
oh,
it is.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Please so continue.
So we got the bifold door off and we're like, all right, we got like two stories of stairs going down a hallway to the fucking door that leads outside.
Right.
Let's start riding this motherfucking bifold door down the steps.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah, dude. It was fucking awesome. We all started out like motherfuckers just sitting on and sliding
like
down.
Like one person? Yeah, like one person. More than one?
No, one person. Okay. One person at a time, but we're sitting on it, though. So it's like a sled, basically.
Oh, sure.
So we're,
and it's slick, all, so yeah. It's fucking flying. Oh,
dude, and the grade of these steps was ridiculous, dude.
Oh, I remember going.
Oh, my God, the grade of those steps.
Like a fucking Billy Goat climbing that shit.
Yeah, like, for real.
Like these steps here at this house. Yeah, wow.
So, everybody's fucking going down this thing, and the drummer for one of the bands, fucking his name... from the band Look What I Did. He's like, you know what? I'm going to surf this fucking shit.
Oh,
like
no.
On his fucking feet.
Oh, damn.
So,
he's lucky he didn't break his fucking neck, man.
Dude, he fucking, the first time he kind of like, fell and rolled down the steps and he was okay. And everybody's like, fucking do it again, blah, blah. So he's got the fucking bifold door at the top of the steps. He's standing there. Oh my God, dude. He fucking jumps on the fucking, he jumps on it on his feet, falls on his ass on it, sliding down, and his fucking right ankle hits the fucking door jamb.
Oh no.
Yeah, his right ankle hits, and he's the fucking drummer, got to play double bass and everything. Hits the door jam, broke his fucking ankle, dude. Like, rolled it like bad. So everybody, dude, and there's fucking video of this on YouTube. I'm gonna fucking put the link on the fucking on the page.
Yeah, we'll put it up.
But dude, like, it was a fun night until that happened.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked
but
up.
Yeah, he fucking broke his ankle. Like I said, there's video footage on YouTube. If you look up, Jay from Look What I Did broke his ankle. You can find it on YouTube there. And like I said, I'll put the link on the page and shit. So.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's a good one. Dude, when you're watching the video, watching everything going on, you're like, that looks like a motherfucking good ass time. And then dude breaks his fucking ankle and is like, aw, that sucks.
Yeah, definitely. Especially like you said, being a drummer too. So.
Oh yeah, for sure being a drummer, man.
Nice. Well, that's the thing about Mayhem, man. We love coming to Mayhem because it's just that great catch. All. I don't know if you saw the thing, just remembered this, of the school superintendent in, I can't remember what state it was in, but they referred to him as the pooper intendant.
I do.
Because
he was out on the fucking goddamn football field
on the rival teams.
Yeah.
Track
and it was
his field.
School superintendent.
Daily. He was doing this every fucking day,
wow,
man.
What a fucking...
I mean, really.
What a hero.
He was,
what a hero.
He was making like $150,000, and it's like, dude, really? Like, you can't just control it?
Come
like,
on, man. Why you gotta
do
that?
Come on. I mean, it's I could see maybe funny, once, though. But like every day, like it was part of his routine.
Like, well, I gotta wake up, shit. Take a shower, get my coffee, drive to work, shit on the football field, go to my office.
In that order. Yeah, what the fuck? I just thought that was so funny.
No, that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, it's total Mayhem related shit. So.
That's
all
just
right.
Fun as fuck.
Well, we'll just keep throwing these good stories at you guys.
Yeah, just having a good time. Anybody got anything they want to say, let us know. Well, you want to do a Skype story, let us know, dude.
Skype your ass in, man. That would be fun. So
hell yeah.
All right, the gauntlet is thrown. See what you guys can do.
Fuck yeah. Love death metal, dude.
Decapitated, man. Spheres of Madness, one of my favorites from them. Oh, I love that shit. I used to play them all the time on my radio show, The Chopping Block, back in the day. And so I had to bust it out, dude.
Fuck yeah, dude. Fucking Decapitated, so fucking good, though, man.
They
were so young when they started, too.
They were. And, they were so talented, every fucking one of them. Speaking of that, the bumper music this time, Death Angel, Armored Saint, Decapitated, and Carcass. So,
yeah,
was a good kudos to those guys. Always big thanks and horns up to Joey Vera for doing the interview. Just a class act, super guy. Yeah. And so that was really cool. And as always, you know, thanks to you guys.
Everybody out there listening, giving us everything. We appreciate it so much. You have no idea. Horns high to you.
Yeah, without a doubt, because it's always nice to get the feedback and get an idea what people like, what they don't like, you know? I mean, we've had a few people say, hey, I don't care for this or that.
Right, right.
But, you know, by and large, we've had a lot of really positive
feedback. Yeah.
And horns the fuck up to Belgrade, Serbia, that continues to bust into the list. They're in the top 10 cities.
Keep on
listening,
you Serbian motherfuckers.
Yeah,
Hell yeah, guys.
I don't know what you're doing over there, drinking, smoking weed, whatever you're doing.
I don't know what you're doing.
Enjoy it and listen, and that's awesome. So it's really cool. And then Tucson, Arizona, busting into the top 10. But the top one is still Bloomington, Illinois, our hometown area.
Home base.
Home base for now. Danbury, Connecticut, which was my former home base and where CK resides. And CK. So he's bringing the fans in. And Omaha, still number 3, Omaha, Nebraska.
Yep.
So thank you, everybody.
Everybody
listening.
Out there listening. So, for real, keep listening. And like we say, spread it like a case of the clap.
There you go. And you want to read?
We got some comments going on here. Fucking some feedback. Kelsey's. She says, "I love that story about Ken McElroy. I never heard of him before, and I love true crime. You guys are awesome." We are very happy to enlighten you on some, and it is a great story, and I'm glad that you enjoy listening.
Yeah,
you're great.
And that was your suggestion, Chris, because I didn't never even heard of it. So that's just really cool how much we've been just bouncing off each other. I've been throwing some ones you'd never heard of.
Exactly.
And likewise.
So oh, the one coming up, dude, the name crazy. Is fucking funny.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. Mr. Karate. Well, Tom Kincaid said Pete's version of Jesse's girl was awesome. Yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah. I would definitely, or I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, me and the guys at work lost it. So
that
would have been good time at work listening to
when
that.
When Pete sent me that fucking file and I started listening to it, I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Dude.
That's hilarious.
The reactions of people with these songs has really been funny because back when I first started doing this would have been, I don't remember, 2004 or 2005-ish, somewhere in there.
Right.
I was at the car wash and I had it on my stereo in my car and I was jamming it and it was just a bunch of those songs and it was just funny. I'm washing my car.
So you just start doing vocals with it?
No, it was just playing on my stereo and this guy was parked next to me and he was like, you know, like the beginning. I remember the song too. It was Beat It. So the song starts off with the music, and I think he was kind of like jamming it a little bit, but like to himself. But I could tell it was like he liked it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden I start singing, and it was like,
what the fuck?
This looked like, what the fuck is that? Like, why?
That's and it's hilarious. Like,
you know, she told you not to run the car around here. You know, it's pretty funny. Beat It, you know. So I might have to play that sometime.
Yeah,
but anyway.
That's fucking good.
It was just funny, the reactions. And then I was at a show one time, a cover band that my wife wanted to go see in Peoria. And the sound guy, I gave him a CD that I had made of some Christmas songs. And it was around Christmas time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's just, you know, playing all different things as the band's taking a break, you know. So he puts that in, and, you know, you're hearing the Christmas music, so people are kind of smiling and
like,
looking
yay.
At each other. And then the same thing, when the vocals come in, they're just like, what the fuck?
Oh!
Well, while I stood up there at the soundboard, like 3 or 4 different people came up there like, what the fuck is this, you know? And at the time, I was calling it Killer Karaoke because
right.
I'm the one that came up with that.
Right.
Not the TV show, me. And so people went online because at the time I was selling the Christmas
the CDs,
album, you know,
yeah.
Sodomized by Santa. it was a good one.
Fucking love that shit.
But anyway, I sold probably 30 of them that night.
No
when
shit.
I got home, there were all these fucking orders. People were buying that shit. It was so fucking funny. And it had to be from that because why else, you know?
Right.
So that just reminded me of that.
That's
so thank
hilarious.
You, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. And then Susan Grimes, she emailed and she says, you guys should do a live podcast. I would definitely come to see that if you did one in Central Illinois. And this is something that me and Pete have been talking about.
It's coming. We're going to do it. We just have to figure it out and
exactly
see
how
we're
to do it.
Do
and
it.
We'd have to get a venue and everything. It's something that we're working on slowly, but it's coming.
Yeah, it would be really cool. We would love to do it.
Yeah,
I think we would thrive in that environment and make it a fun night. You know?
It'd be fucking awesome.
Have a band or two jamming.
Yeah,
that would even be fucking better.
Fuck yeah.
So, anyway, we put fucking Johnny Carson to fucking shame. You know what I mean? We just fucking
fuck Johnny.
Tabby commented, thanks for the sticker I got in the mail. I put it on the back window of my car. So,
hell yeah.
Thank you, Tabby. That's cool. That's why we got them with the other saying on the sticker, which is spreading
like a case of the clap in the trailer park.
Yeah, and so that's a lot of fun on the sticker. And then the T-shirt, like Chris said earlier, says Get Your Murder On. So two different little slogans we've been using. So we're just making the best of it, and the most of it, I should say. Next week, you guys are in for a treat, man. 90
mentors.
Fucking minutes of the mentors.
Interviews. Our discussion.
Yes, you music. Can cross this off your fucking bucket list.
Yeah, the mentors is the shit, dude. This episode is going to blow your minds. If you don't know who the mentors are, start listening.
It's going to be really funny, but we've got interviews, you know, with April Jones.
Obviously CK's on there.
Right.
We
got Dr. Heathen Scum,
the bass player for the mentors,
and Rick Fisher from Sick Rick Masks. He does a great interview about his El Duce mask he made. So,
and we're doing a little discussion about the documentary Kings of Sleaze about the mentors. So,
it's gonna be
fucking good.
It's killer, and there's a bunch of music, all mentors music too. So it's really kick ass. That's gonna be
next week. No karaoke next week.
Yeah, no karaoke next week. But 90 minutes of the mentors, you gotta love it. And so that'll be next week, and then the week after that, we're gonna play or we're gonna have two bonus episodes.
And we're gonna take that week off as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna be gone, and we're just gonna play two bonus episodes of interviews with the full Joey Vera interview, and then the full Felipe Balcazar one, which is about 25 minutes. And so this way, you guys will have that, and then we come back. We'll be doing West Memphis 3. It's gonna be fucking brutal. So we'll keep it going, but we just want to let you know there'll be slight difference on how we do it.
You'll have something to listen to, though.
Yeah, we won't leave you hanging. We'll give you a little bit to nibble on when we get back. And, you know, we'll be back with the more murder fucking metal mayhem.
Murder metal mayhem.
Right. But, you know, how can we leave them, Chris, without something that you... This is all your fault.
Yeah, I'm sorry, bro.
Because I was really fucking busy Sunday.
After the meeting with Steve, yeah.
And all this shit I had to do. And you sent me a text and said, dude, you should think about doing Ice Ice Baby for this episode.
Because we're doing the ice, man. I mean, fuck.
Which makes all the fucking sense in the world.
And the funny part was, you already had the episode named Ice Ice Baby.
I did. I mean, that was the pathetic... Is that even naming it that didn't spark
anything.
Because the reason, because I have such a good one I was going to play that I just did.
Right.
Sexy Back. It is fucking epic.
I've heard it. And it's fucking hilarious. Fucking awesome.
I was going to play that this episode. So I think in my mind, I'm like, already got the karaoke.
Right.
But still no excuse. I named the fucking episode Ice Ice Baby. And forgot that that was a song.
That was a song.
That would be really funny hearing me do. So now you're going to hear about a minute and a half of it. I did not have time to do the whole thing because I literally had so much shit to get done. But I gave this to you.
A little
my
taste
gift.
Of Ice Ice, baby.
So a little vanilla ice.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it. Ice, ice, baby. Vanilla ice, ice.
Mother Man.